England has become one vast ordnance dump and field park. In every wood and copse, in leafy dead-end lanes and side roads, often in private gardens, under quarries and embankments, there it all was. Trucks, ambulances, tanks, armoured cars, carriers, jeeps, bulldozers, ducks, vehicles of all kinds. Vast, really vast numbers of them. And great mountains of stores, weapons and ammunition, rations, bridging equipment, tyres, timber, millions of tons. And everywhere today, we've met the columns of men in battle dress, men marching, men running, men deploying on exercises, men being transported here and there by the thousand in trucks and lorries, men testing their equipment, tuning up their engines, waterproofing their vehicles, raising great sweeping clouds of yellow dust as their tanks bump and crash along the test tracks. In the whole history of the world, there never has been such a vast concentration of all the paraphernalia of war in so small a space.
On the eve of this great adventure, I send my best wishes to every soldier in the Allied team. To us is given the honor of striking a blow for freedom which will live in history. And in the better days that lie ahead, men will speak with pride of our doings. We have a great and a righteous cause. Let us pray that the Lord, mighty in battle, will go forth with our armies, and that his special providence will aid us in the struggle. I want every soldier to know that I have complete confidence in the successful outcome of the operations that we are now about to begin. With stout hearts and with enthusiasm for the contest, let us go forward to victory.
Okay, everybody. Well, this is it, boys. Tomorrow's the big show. D-Day is tomorrow. And H hour, when the American and our own forces go into the continent, is sometime early tomorrow morning.
It looks like we have a few high explosives. I just looked it over. We have no personnel. Just about 3 tons of high explosives. If I'd known what I was getting into, I'm not so sure whether I'd be here or not.
All contact with the shore has ended. No one may come aboard. No one may go ashore. In Navy jargon, the ship and all of us aboard here are sealed. We're sealed because we've been told the answers to the questions that the whole world has been asking for 2 years and more. Where and how and when. Troops swarmed up the rope ladders last night. Strong, healthy, formidable men, many of them going into battle for the first time. At every minute of the day and the night, the ship and the men aboard her are alert. Plans of immense complexity are being studied, and every man, soldier or sailor, is learning to the last detail the part that he himself has to play. As you walk along the decks, men are reading, or sleeping, or talking in small clusters. There's a tenseness in the air, as every man aboard waits for the moment to which everything has been bent in these last few years. Ready for the night, not far ahead now, when we sail from Britain under a full moon, with course set for France.
The secret of this embarkation has been so well kept that none of the troops knew they were coming aboard until last night. We saw ships that we'd never seen before, and we saw more ships than we'd dreamed of. Specially built troop ships, vessels carrying motor transport, oil tankers, hospital ships. These hospital ships had ambulance landing craft in the davits. Ship after ship after ship, moored in lines on each beam, stretching for mile after mile. These ships were all flying the red ensign of the merchant navy, all manned by civilians who will carry our troops and equipment into the attack.
This morning, the anchorage has suddenly come to life, not as in the last few days with a sporadic movement here and there, but this is a large-scale business with columns of smaller ships and craft threading their way down the channel between the larger ships that still lie moored. These are the preliminary moves that weather, and weather alone permitting, will develop into the great assault upon the European shore. There are fighters still swooping and soaring among the shipping, giving the AK-AK gunners what may be their last practice before the real thing. And a squadron of aircraft on operational missions go out overhead from time to time.
The first aircraft that is going to lead the very front in the early hours of tomorrow morning is turning onto the end of the tarmac to make its takeoff. A graceful machine, and its wingtip light shining red and green over the heads of the dark, small figures of people on the aerodrome watching it take off. Taking off from here loaded with parachutists, and taking with it perhaps the hopes and the fears and the prayers of millions of people in this country who sleep tonight not knowing that this mighty operation is taking place. There she goes now, the first aircraft leading the attack on Europe. I've just driven 60 or 70 miles to this station at a pretty mad speed to get here in time for this takeoff. And I pass through villages and towns of people on their way to the cinema and on their way strolling about the streets and coming and going from the shops and riding about on their bicycles, people who had no idea that the thing for which they've waited in suspense so long has at last begun to happen.
In the plane, we stand packed abreast. I'm jumping, one but last of my stick. And as we stand there in these planes, for there's no room to sit, we feel the tremendous vibration of the four motors, and all around in the coming darkness are other great planes and row upon row of gliders. And in the crowded fuselage, all you see in the pale light of an orange bulb is the man standing next to you. And on we fly, on and out over the channel. And the minutes go by, and the stick commander says that the pilot has told him we're out over a great armada of naval ships. And then it's something else he has to say. Something that gives you a dry feeling in your mouth. Flak.
At noon today, we raised anchor, and we were ready to go. Slowly and majestically, as minesweepers and destroyers curved their way into position, we gave the lead to the other transports. Under a grey sky, we looked at the coast of Britain and watched it slowly grow more dim. On the decks and in the holds, the soldiers were waiting.
Well, we were just off the Southampton waters then, and I happened to be on lookout when I heard the captain say to the number one, "Well, this is something big. We must be in the real thing, because just take a look around. You can see the various silhouettes of various ships, and there was quite a few at that. And this is what there was known as Piccadilly Circus, otherwise known as Foresaid. And from there, well, we guessed from then onwards that we were on the real thing, and that we were in for it. But that got the troops a bit excited, because they started climbing up over the side off the landing craft to have a look over as we passed the nab. And you could see the Isle of Wight in the distance, the coastline of it. And at the same time, all you could see was a mass of ships. They were coming from everywhere. It was a sight that, well, you would only see once in a lifetime. As far as going into the beach and the enemy, we were all on the same fort. They all had their own quiet little moments. Luckily, we had a padre on board, and we had a service held. And that's one of the few times when I said a few prayers.
Say together this prayer, say after me, "Teach us, good Lord, to serve thee as thou deservest, to give and not to count the cost, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest. To labor and not to ask for any reward. Save that of knowing that we do thy will. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
A2, what is the capital of Belgium?
Brussels.
Correct. B2, what is the capital of Holland?
I don't know.
Capital of Holland is The Hague. A3, who designed the Spitfire?
Mitchell.
Very good. R.J. Mitchell designed the Spitfire. B3, who was the first man to exceed 200 miles per hour on land?
Major Campbell.
Wrong. Major Seagrave was the first man.
In the wardroom, dinner. From the menu, soup, roast beef and green peas, and apples and cream, it might have been a crossing to Cherbourg in peacetime. And then you realized that your hand was moving just a little sluggishly to your mouth. Your tummy wasn't just where it usually was. The men around you were rather silent, and when they spoke, they were self-conscious. It was a room full of men on the way, wondering, waiting, and listening. On deck, signals were flashing between ships. Enterprise had run up a flag signal. Boat crews were making their final preparations. There was a tenseness and a sense of good humor and good fellowship that were impossible of translation into words. And now, as the time draws near for darkness, and we sail steadily nearer to the coastline of France, most of those same things are still happening. Every man is wondering. Every man is completely calm.
From where I am, standing between the two pilots of this glider, I can see the navigation lights of the tug in front of us, and off to left and right, the navigation lights of other tugs and other gliders bound on the same mission. Circling above from time to time, I can see the lights of the fighter screen, which is protecting us. And looking back down the glider, there are seated, although I can't see them in the half light, officers and men, all laden up with equipment so heavily that they can barely walk. But they've got to carry with them the means by which they can fight the moment they land. The gliders which are coming in to support the paratroops are carrying vital cargoes. The senior staff unders, transport, signal equipment, and above all, the guns on which so much will depend in the morning. The moon is still hiding behind the clouds. But when I looked out through the perspex of the cockpit just now, we were passing right over some of the ships of the third wave of the assault forces. The ships which will carry British and American and Canadian troops to the shores of France in a few hours' time. But at the moment, those shores are still covered in darkness.
At the minefields, the torpedo-like paravanes were lowered overboard. The big steam winches let out the sweeping cable, stopping every so often while heavy cutters were clamped on. Then away went the flotilla in a staggered line astern, battle ensigns flying at the masthead. Through the night, there were sudden breath-holding sounds as though an underwater Hercules hit the side of the ship with a great sledgehammer. One or another of the ships putting up a mine. They just plowed on, though, dead straight, while a Smoky Joe trawler astern marked the swept water with Dan Boys. It was a night of second-by-second vigilance. The faces of those men were streaked and taut with weariness. As we had neared the end of the sweep, tension crept up a notch higher. Would we be spotted from the shore? Would a searchlight suddenly glare out and fasten on us? Then the shore batteries. Would this, supposing that, I began to wish I could yell and jump up and down or break something, anything, to cut that silent, taut wire of strain. If anyone else felt like that, they didn't show it. At last, we turned aside and went back. Glows that waxed and waned like mechanical lungs in the direction of Le Havre told of the all-night pounding the Allied air forces had been delivering. Interlaced flak beaded up from over Cherbourg way. Then the rumble of guns from the sea told us the fight was on. The dawn came up like thunder today, all right.
We're over the enemy coast now, and the run-in has started. 1 minute, 30 seconds, red light, green light, and out, out, get on, get out, get out. Out fast into the cool night. Out, out into the air over France. And we know that the dropping zone is obstructed. We're jumping, in fact, into fields covered with poles. But I hit my chute and lower my kit bag, which suspends on the end of a 40-foot rope from my harness. And then the ground comes up to hit me, and I find myself in the middle of a cornfield. I look around, and even with a compass, I can't be quite sure where I am. And overhead, hundreds of parachutes and containers are coming down. The whole sky now is a fantastic chimera of lights and black, and one plane gets hit and disintegrates wholesale, sprinkling a myriad of burning pieces all over the sky. A tremendous bombardment has started now on the coast defenses from the sky, and hundreds of Lancasters are raining down on the coast behind us with blockbusters.
Before 8 hours for our force. That's to say, in 25 minutes' time, the assault on the beaches will begin. At the moment, in broad daylight and under a rather overcast sky with patches of blue here and there, we're looking out on an absolutely fantastic scene to the accompaniment of incredible sounds. Overhead, the thunderous roar of fortresses and liberators going in to blast the coast. On the horizon, flash after flash from the guns of the bombarding ships, the destroyers fairly close inshore, the cruisers right on the horizon astern of us, some 7 miles out or so, and we know that beyond them too are battleships firing their 15 and 16 inch guns against shore targets. In the nearer distance, all around us are craft of every sort and kind. The great LSIs, the converted liners and cargo ships, are there on our port beam. Some of them have already lowered their LCAs to carry the assault troops in. There's a stream of them pouring now from the LSIs to port and coming by slowly on a rather rough and choppy sea. To starboard, we've seen a string of LCTs move out and form up in line, and they're proceeding slowly now towards the beaches. Five minutes before H minus five, and looking straight in towards the coastline of France. Our assault craft are now out of sight, lost in the lowering cloud there by the beaches. Our LCTs are in there, and within a few moments, the first tanks that lead the assault will be on the beaches and opening up with their guns. They're followed by other tanks that grapple with the sea wall. We've seen these assault craft bouncing on the waves. There are white horses on the deep green sea now, and it's been a pretty uncomfortable journey for them into shore. We, standing here, wish those boys who've gone in all the luck in the world.
This is the day, and this is the hour. The sky is lightning. Lightning over the coast of Europe as we go in. The whole sea itself seems restless and excited with the tension of the moment. The sky is moving and changing the whole time in a high wind that is sweeping. And in this dramatic natural setting, we are moving towards the shore. The battleship and other bombardment ships over on the flank are pouring in their fire. And now, other warships moving across our path are laying a smoke screen that is taking the place of the cloud which formerly lay over the waters. And now, there's a signal from the flagship.
All hands to meeting station.
That's the signal for our sailors on board this craft to get ready for the landing. The sun is blazing down brightly now. It's almost like an omen, the way it's suddenly come out just as we were going in. The whole sky is bright. The sea is a glittering mass of silver, with all these craft of every kind moving across it, and the great battleships in the background blazing away at the shore. There go the craft past us, the other landing craft. Some are left behind, the slower ones. Each taking their part and going in at the right time for their right job. You can't imagine anything like this march of ships, like soldiers marching in line. It's a purpose shared among many ships and among many hundreds of thousands of fighting men who are going in now to the coast of Europe to do the biggest job they've ever had to do. I can't record any more now because the time has come for me to get my kit on my back and get ready to step off on that shore. And it's a great day.